Welcome to the Ideation Podcast. This is an on-the-go podcast designed to help you move your ideas forward through better implementation. In each episode, we'll hear from thought leaders in multiple industries, share about how they implement their ideas in order to make them remarkable. That is worth making a remark about. I'm your host, Charles Lee. I'm super excited about today's episode. It's an interview I did with Vijay Kumar not too long ago, and some of you may know him, others may not. I first came across Dr. Kumar's work when I read his book, 101 Design Methods, a phenomenal book. It is a structured approach for driving innovation in your organization. It is probably one of the most practical books I've read on design thinking, problem solving, and innovation. And so I reached out to him, and he is currently a professor at the Illinois Institute of Technology's Institute of Design in Chicago. He is an innovation consultant, a coach, an advisor to global organizations for the use of structure methods for conceiving reliable human-centered innovations and turning them into strategic plans for organizations. He's worked with brands including McDonald's, Motorola, P&G, T-Mobile, Target, and a myriad of others. What I really appreciate is Dr. Kumar has been one of really the key historical individuals who have shaped design thinking. In fact, you're going to listen to his story and you're going to quickly find out that he's been working on design thinking for multiple decades. So the topics we went into that was very fascinating for myself was why design thinking is crucial to innovation. We also talked about overcoming some of the obstacles of executing human-centered design, which is a very practical challenge for any business or organization. We also talked about how to create and measure successful innovation, as well as what are some of the key insights he has to cultivating a culture of innovation in the workplace, as well as some resources for further discovery. If you are like me and you want to continually learn about not only what is innovation, but how it actually applies into day-to-day business, you're going to really enjoy this interview. So without further ado, let's kind of tune in to a conversation we recently had, and I hope you get a lot of it walking away. Once again, if you enjoy this podcast, we'd love further endorsement from you as our audience continues to grow. So if you can give us a rating on iTunes, or if you're listening to this via a link on a post, please leave your feedback and your comments or email us at hello@theideation.com, and we'd love to hear from you. Well, enjoy this episode with Vijay Kumar. Well, Vijay, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us.
My pleasure.
Tell our listeners a little bit about your upbringing and what sparked you into kind of the field that you're in, which is strategic design planning and design methods. I'd love to hear a little bit about your story.
Great. Going back many, many years ago, when I was in India, I was born in India, I was raised there. Design was just beginning to come to India, the idea of design. Mm. That was probably 1960s or early 70s. So Indian government wanted to start a design school. So they invited Charles and Ray Ames. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you know them.
Yeah.
They're very famous designers from USA. Mm-hmm. To come to India and recommend the kind of school India should have. So they came and traveled all around India and made a recommendation to the government of India. And based on that, the first design school was started. Mm-hmm. Called National Institute of Design. So at that time, I was in the high school, entering college age, and I was always being creative, like making things and, being creative in anything that I did. So I got attracted to the idea of design because it was being talked about in those days that the school was starting.
Right.
So I got interested, even though my family wanted me to become a doctor. So I left that, and then because my heart was in something creative. And so I joined this design school. In 1976, Charles Andre Ames returned to the school to see how the school was performing. So I had the chance to meet with them and work with them. So that was the beginning of my interest in design. And I was really fascinated by Charles Ames' mind, how it worked in connecting dots for solving very complex problems. So I was fascinated by that thinking. So ever since I got pulled into the idea of understanding how people's minds work for connecting dots in solving complex problems using creativity. That is the beginning. And then, of course, when I was a student, more than doing my own projects, I was sort of shamelessly budging in other people's projects and asking them for what are you doing? And then helping them out. So I got exposed to various kinds of thinking that people had on solving design problems. Mm. That was fascinating. And of course, over the years, I built on that initial impetus to know more about how people think about creative problem solving.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you've dedicated pretty much most of your adulthood to this topic. And, of late, a lot of people use the phrase design thinking. How would you maybe define or describe what design thinking is? And why is that so valuable to innovation?
Yes, you're right. Ever since that period, the entire life, I have been sort of involved in understanding the idea of design. But design thinking as a term has been always there.
Yeah.
Only now we're using that term explicitly, right? I've been doing design thinking right from those days, 1970s, and when I entered into the discipline. But now it has become a, sort of a term that people explicitly use. So my definition of that is any problem solving mindset that looks at people's needs and problems. So it starts with people and their needs. Understanding what those needs are, sometimes unarticulated by people. So you have to go out there and find out those needs and solving those needs by creating new ideas, whether they're products or experiences or services, but also combining that way of thinking with technology thinking, how that need can be satisfied from the technology point of view, and business thinking. So this is something that many design thinkers do not explicitly consider. For me, that is important. It's not about human-centered way of solving problems, but how effectively that kind of thinking can be merged with technology way of solving problems, or business way of solving problems, or policy ways of solving problems. That's why my higher level definition of design thinking.
So, the sense of like human-centered innovation or human-centered design kind of implies that some have not done that well, right?
Yes.
So when you think about that, I mean, what are some of the, is it because people are thinking of problem solving kind of detached from the human experience? That's the issue? Or why such an emphasis on human-centered design?
Yes, great question. That's human-centered design is at the base of anything that we do, design thinkers do. But in my experience, of course, technologists come out with innovations, right?
Right.
So, or business executives come out with innovations by looking at market space and finding out a gap and trying to fill that gap through a business solution. Technologists or R&D departments in organizations come out with a technology-based innovation and try to create a product or a service based on that. But sometimes you're so passionate. Technologies are so passionate about technology. Business folks are so passionate about businesses. Sometimes you're so passionate that you're fully focused on using your competency in technology or business as part of the entire direction for solving the problem. It's a kind of a, you know, you get so narrowly focused, sometimes very difficult to take off and take a step back and look at what you're solving at a larger, broader scale. Technologies asking themselves, what kind of technology solution am I producing? Ultimately, it's going to be used by someone, you know, that someone will be delighted to use my technology solutions. That sometimes doesn't come to the foreground when you're too involved with solving a problem. Mm-hmm. So the details, you know, the detailed conundrum.
So if I hear you correctly, I think, which is a great point, is that sometimes one specialty area of focus kind of creates blind spots.
Yes.
For the overall like delivery to human beings,
right,
even if it's a technology.
Exactly,
And so that's very helpful. I mean, I first came across your work through your book, 101 Design Methods. It's called A Structured Approach for Driving Innovation in Your Organization. And what I really appreciate in the first part of the book is, you know, some of your core principles for successful innovation. Maybe you can share a couple as teasers.
Right.
I'm sure people listening will pick up the book as well. But what are some of the core principles that really drive successful innovation?
Right. Yes, I talk about six fundamental principles. Mm-hmm. Of course, in the book, I've highlighted four of those.
Right.
They're really key principles that any successful innovator need to be thinking about. For example, human-centered design. Mm-hmm. If you turn that into a principle, the principle might tell you, build your innovations around people's needs or experiences. That's a fundamental principle.
That sounds so common sense.
Yeah, it is common sense. But the problem is that we don't apply that in explicit, deliberate, conscious way, right? We are so trapped in other ways of looking at the problem. We don't use that. So that's why in a lot of technology solutions, there's a great solution from the technology point of view or, from the business point of view. They still have problems succeeding because they were not considering the human aspect as the core part of their innovation. So it's a common, design thinking in that sense is a very commonsensical approach. But in order to apply that commonsensical thinking, you have to be deliberate and conscious about applying them. And there are several tools that you can use, several methods or several mindsets that can be used not so much in an intuitive way, but in a very disciplined way.
Do people kind of ignore that because it just sounds like, yeah, of course you would do that, and people actually don't? And we found in some of our client work is that it's not that they don't know that it's a value,
yes,
but either they lack a method or they just assume everybody's thinking that way.
Right, exactly. That's where the word empathy is such a powerful word.
Absolutely, yeah.
From that point of view, we as innovators will have to have a very high level of empathy. Empathy means feeling like another person. Mm. So can you feel like your customer? Can you feel like your end user?
Right.
That requires a very, you know, sort of a, you know, very detailed, deliberate approach. We sometimes take it for granted that, oh, I know my customer, I know my end user. But that may be built on several assumptions that you have taken.
Right. Well, one of the other principles that you mentioned that I really like, and maybe you can kind of build upon it, and that is, you know, thinking of innovations as systems.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
Yes, that again goes back to my earlier point about when technologists try to solve a technology solution, they are so much involved and passionate about that there is a narrow focus on technology solutions. So as innovators, We cannot get trapped into that narrow view of anything that we solve. Yeah. Sometimes you have to take a step back, and whether you're designing a product or a service, take a step back and ask ourselves, where is that product going to be used? Who's going to use it? In what context? Who are the other products that are in competition with that product? Which are the organization that is producing that product? Which policies or regulations that the framework that we society lives in has That's an effect point. On that? All those matter to the success of that product. So that is the systemic view of that product. So that's so very important to understand the whole context of any innovation that you come out with by studying the whole system in which that product exists. Mm-hmm.
So when you say system, it includes the environment in which the product lives.
Yes.
And all of the kind of touch points that product will have.
Right.
In so many different areas.
Yes.
So it definitely sounds like we live in a time where it must be a collaborative commitment
exactly.
to launch.
Exactly.
You know, along those lines, you also talk about cultivating a innovation culture.
Right.
And soon as like those words come out of my mouth, I know some people are listening going, oh man, to create a culture like that in my company would be so difficult. What are some tips and insights on how to frame that conversation? Maybe for some organization and companies, you know, I think people would naturally say innovative culture is important.
Right.
So what are some ways to think about it or how to even get there?
Right. Absolutely. Right. Great question. You're right. Innovation culture is probably the most difficult challenge any organization faces, how to build that. And even to me, that's the biggest challenge for being successful in your innovation. But the way I see it is that can you take even as an organization, even as an individual in the organization, can individuals be empowered to be champions of innovative actions? Lots of examples in organizations where individuals have proven themselves as great champions of a design process, innovation process. That's one way, say for example, Procter & Gamble, if you look at that organization, it became a very innovative company because of a few individuals within the organization like Claudia Kochka
right.
and great designers like that. Of course, they had the buy-in from the CEO of the company, but they were really energetic, enthusiastic and telling everyone within the organization about the value that design or innovation thinking can bring. That's one aspect. Teams in organization, a small team can really do magic in an organization.
Absolutely.
A small team demonstrating the value of innovative thinking through a project, and that has to be deliberately shared all across the organization through talks or other kind of, or various ways in which you can share that. So taking active steps and sharing successes through individuals or teams is a great way. I've, you know, my students, the company that I work with, there's something that I have seen actually doing that. The third thing that you can do is any project that you do in an organization, can you make it as multidisciplinary as possible by bringing in engineers and business thinkers and, you know, even financial analysts or, you know, people from the finance department or legal department, make them participate, at least not continuously, but at least once in a while the project is going on through work sessions or small seminars. That can have a tremendous effect on people in the organization, affecting their culture behaviors, because once they are part of the process, everyone feels ownership of anything that comes out of that process.
Absolutely.
So that's a great impetus for creating innovation culture in organizations.
Yeah, and we found great success too in that when our clients have connected multiple departments. At first, it's
yes.
kind of awkward if that's not the culture, because
yes.
they're not used to that type of invitation. Right. But if you can tell the story and make the case that innovation is often sparked when seemingly unrelated ideas intersect,
yes.
And so I've seen great success. So definitely thanks for validating that. Sure. Let's talk a little bit about embarking on a design innovation process. Mm-hmm. What are some things, because I'm sure every company is different, every organization functions differently. Mm-hmm. But what are some things maybe that they should be thinking of as they are sitting in a room with their team and saying, how can we create a, you know, innovation design process? Mm-hmm. What are some things that they should be mindful of?
First of all, organizations and people within organizations have their own individual processes. Business folks have their own process. Say, let's study the marketplace and understand a gap in the marketplace and try to come out with an innovation. That's what business folks in that team might take as an approach. Technologists and engineers have their own process. They mm-hmm. start with, you know, how to make things work, right? So one of the first things that the team has to have a consensus about is that, oh, we all have our individual processes. How to bring all those processes together in an integrated way, and having that open mind of not just steadfastly holding on to your process in a blind way, but being open to integrate other disciplines and their processes into the fold.
Would you do that through some type of like a voting method, or like, you know, I'm assuming that there probably still is one primary decision maker.
Right. Yeah.
So would you recommend that kind of method of like, how do they agree ultimately to a direction in your, how has it worked?
In my experience, it is, voting is good, but probably the last resort that I will take, I would rather sort of start conversations about the innovation process and probably look at case studies or previous projects that have been successful as a team. Look at those case studies or examples or illustrations. Then people start appreciating, oh, there is a bigger process, bigger than my own process, that works and made that project successful. And have conversations about that, right? That's a great way, and have a consensus about if everyone agrees. Of course, everyone will naturally. I've seen that practically happening in many of the, you know, collaborative sessions that I've had. Ultimately, people, once they get into that open-mindedness, there is consensus mm-hmm. for a larger, higher level process that everyone can agree to.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So what I'm hearing is, I like to think in terms of like steps and trying to find some practical 1, 2, 3. So it might be that you give your team pre-work,
right,
where maybe they can present some of the processes that they use,
right,
along with maybe a case study or two of how it's worked in their respective area of focus, and then begin, someone can facilitate conversation and hopefully land somewhere, whether in that meeting or a subsequent meeting.
Right.
That's really helpful.
You're absolutely right. Thinking about it in steps, practical steps like that.
Great. Well, let's talk. Just a few minutes that we have left is, you know, one of the big conversations in the area of innovation is like, how do you measure whether you have either an innovative culture or you've been successful in innovation as a company? I know in the years past, sometimes companies have said, well, we want us submit for X amount of patents on new innovations.
Yes.
And how have you seen, you know, KPIs or key performance indicators in different places of how they measure success?
Right. Yeah.
Like how do we know we're an innovative company? Is it just the bottom line?
Right. Yeah.
In your mind, how do you develop a criteria around success?
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There is no single measure even today,
absolutely,
which is absolutely dependable for measuring innovation success. But you can, you know, traditionally we have used measures, how much money you spend on R&D, or as you said, number of patents.
Yeah.
And, but that alone will not be a very good measure, right? Of course, to me, the success factor is a combination of many factors like that, depending upon your context. But I would highlight highlight a framework that has been very successfully used to measure innovation success. There's the 10 types of innovation framework. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether you have come across that. Doblin you know, created that, and I was the originator of that framework.
Oh, you were?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I was 1998 is when that is my project that I created, the 10 types of innovation, but I was in Doblin.
I actually read that book, 10 types of
innovation. That the book came out only recently, but the framework we developed when I was working with Doblin, 1998. So, you know, 7 years. I just want to focus on, there are 10 types of innovations, right? With a very generic framework that will allow you to think about different types of innovations. And each innovation done by organizations can be mapped on those 10 types. And if you can measure, again, qualitatively, not using quantitative measures like number of patents and R&D spend, qualitatively, how successful the company has been in each of those 10 types, right? Mm-hmm. So the advantage with the 10-type framework is that you're not thinking about innovation in general. You can specifically think about, you can be very qualitatively minded in terms of measuring one type of innovation. For example, product performance is one of them.
Yeah.
How did I improve my product performance?
Right.
So you can qualitatively assess measure of innovation for product performance. Similarly, service innovation, branding innovation, customer experience innovations, process innovations, or structural, organizational structural innovations, or business model innovations. Those are part of the 10 types. Each can be measured because they talk about a very specific type. And that's a fantastic framework that we've been using, and Doblin, even today, the book 10 Types of Innovation talks about that as a measure. They've given so many examples of individual innovations and organization that are mapped on those 10 types. And
I mean, that's a great, definitely a great read, 10 Types of Innovation. It's actually helped us in our business. We kind of took the 10 types and put it into three large buckets. Just systemic, product, and brand experience.
Right,
And so thinking along those lines, because when you talk about innovation, it's you're right. It's not just thinking broadly about it, but you also need to think particular about different types of innovation happening in your company. Let me ask you two final questions. One is, in your opinion, when you read about innovation or talk about or consult, what's not being talked about enough in your mind that should be talked about?
Right. Okay. That's a great question. What probably, in my opinion, what is not being talked about much are two things. One is, actually, we touched upon that. One is integration of different disciplines.
Excellent.
Even today, you know, in organizations, innovations happens in, you know, very specific business units, cutting across business units and integrating that thinking process all across the organization is a big challenge. But that has been talked about very explicitly in organizations, and organization being open to make that integration happen. I'm seeing more and more of that happening in organizations nowadays. For example, Google and some of the new organizations like Airbnb or Uber, and they're you know, approaching innovation from that perspective of creating innovations as a fundamental integration between technology, business, user-centered thinking, and policy thinking, and things like that.
Those are great examples, yes.
So the second part is the system view. Again, going back to innovations are systems. Especially, you mentioned that in our complex world today, it has to be a collaborative process, right? Things are all interconnected and getting more and more interconnected these days with the Internet of Things and those kinds of technology-based interconnectivity. But, you know, in that context, how do we maximize collaboration through addressing systems? So collaboration and system thinking go hand in hand. So that's something that I think will require more and more attention for innovators to be successful.
That's really good. Well, let me end with this question that we ask most of our guests is, who continues to inspire you in this field, and what are some books you would recommend for people trying to engage the study of design thinking or innovation?
Right. Yes, I think innovative thinkers who talk about innovation as a broad concept that touches on many aspects of our life.
Right.
Those are the kinds of thinkers that attracts me a lot. Of course, you know, they come from academics, they come from business, and they come from governments, and even government are really fascinated by some of the thinking going on at the government levels. People are thinking about leaders, political leaders are thinking about how to make innovation just as a corporation might think about. Those are the fascinating conversations that I've been having with people. And more than that, you know, I'm a teacher, right?
Yeah.
I teach young minds about innovative thinking. Some of the young people, how they approach innovation is very fascinating to me. They are my greatest fans in cutting edge thinking about innovations. Because design thinking and innovation is ultimately a certain commonsensical way of approaching problems. And once you put forth those commonsensical challenges to young minds, how they approach it in completely different ways that was not there several years ago, that's something that I appreciate a lot, right? Young minds and the teams that I work with, I'm continually fascinated by how they change some of the method that I suggest, how they reframe some of those things in their own ways and taking the solution to a completely different level. Mm-hmm.
Are there a couple of books that come to mind? I mean, obviously your book.
Yes, of course, yeah. The 10 Types of Innovation.
10 Types of Innovation.
And lots of books that have come out recently about talking about design and business combination, like Roger Martin's Business of Design. Yeah. And of course, David Kelly from IDEO and Tom Kelly, they have written some very interesting books on creativity
yeah.
Art of Innovation is a good book. Those are all great. And then some new books are coming out. It's all about, thinking about innovation in a very, sort of a comprehensive way.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending a few minutes. And we really appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, and I'm going to talk to you soon.